Okay, it's great to see you here this morning. I have a question for you. How many of you were in California for the Northridge earthquake? Oh, a lot of you, right? And if you were living here, did you feel it out in Ventura? Yeah, really? Okay, all right. Good to know. My husband and I were living in North Hollywood at the time, and we wrote out the earthquake on our waterbed. It sounds kind of kind of weird, but we were sort of sloshing around. And fortunately, the only damage that we sustained was our china cabinet opened up, and all of the glasswork fell out and broke. And then my neighbor came over, and she handed me her baby, and she went into our bathroom, and she used the bathroom, and she accidentally, because it was pitch dark, flushed a tube of hair gel down the toilet. So we had a stopped-up toilet for several days. But that was all the damage that we sustained. And the good thing about the Northridge earthquake was that it really made me make a commitment to work on my earthquake preparedness. Now, I haven't started yet, but I figure, what's the rush, you know? Yeah. At the time of the Northridge earthquake, I was just starting out in the certificated class program for this denomination, the Church of Religious Science, now called Centers for Spiritual Living. And I was in our first class in North Hollywood called Foundations. And in that class, we were all talking about how your consciousness creates what happens to you. And right after the earthquake, we noticed a lot of comparison going on. Some people would say, well, my house was fine. And others would say, I lost everything. And you could see people like, ooh, what was in that person's consciousness? It's embarrassing, right? Yeah, I had a friend, a ministerial colleague that I met after I moved here. And when I met her and she asked me what church I served at, she said, oh, you're the church that believes that people, that you blame people when they create a disease, right? And I said, it's a little bit deeper than that, but yes, there is some of that still going on in this denomination where we rather than giving all of the compassion and love and understanding that people deserve when they're going through something difficult, sometimes there is still a little bit of this, what's in your consciousness? What did you do to create that? And it's good to look within, and it's good to look at how we're responding to things. But often what creates something is so much bigger than we can ever imagine. So we don't have to get all blamey and judgy about it, whether it's with somebody else or most certainly with ourselves. Joel Goldsmith said that we are here to demonstrate the infinite nature of our being. And I can understand why people are confused, because people will think, well, if I'm the infinite nature of my being and I'm going to demonstrate that, I'm going to call forth everything that I want, everything that I want to have happen. And that's not necessarily the case. In Tosha Silver's book, in one of them, I can't remember which one, she talks about how Sri Ramakrishna, who is an Indian saint, that he died of throat cancer. And then she goes on to say that Jesus didn't exactly die sitting by the pool and drinking margaritas, did he? Not so much. So, demonstrating the infinite nature of our being is not the ability to manifest every single thing that we think we want, but it is the ability to have and to live from the place that actually is everything that we want, which is oneness with God. There are certain symptoms of this type of consciousness, and I'm going to talk about a few of them today. There are many, but I'm just going to talk about a few of them. And before I do, I have to give you a warning. This message may be hazardous to your separate self, okay? One of the first symptoms of infinite consciousness, and I'm just going to start calling it mystical consciousness or a mystic, right? Because everybody has an inner mystic. So one of the symptoms that your inner mystic is at play is that the inner mystic doesn't push away what is not wanted. The inner mystic befriends or embraces or welcomes what is not wanted. In that beautiful reading that Hugh did, which is, I think, actually poetry, adds poetry and rap together, so he might have just rapped for all of you. The line, of course, that stood out for me, and perhaps others of you in this sanctuary, the line that stood out for me was that does the compost cycle believe in life after death? Does it? I think it's similar thing to say if we say, does death believe in resurrection? I think it does. And if that's the case, does failure believe in success? What if it does? What if failure does believe in success? Because often what we are labeling as failure is really just an opening for spirit to get us to go in a different direction, to have a bigger success than we ever thought was possible. You know, back to Jesus, who did not die by the pool sipping margaritas. You ever think about the ministry of Jesus? I like to think about Jesus, like, let's say, I don't know, he comes back and he's incognito about the whole thing, okay? It's not like, you know, in the fundamentalist church where the apocalypse and all that stuff. He just comes back and he's all incognito and he goes for a job interview. And the job interview says, So you didn't start work until you were 30? What were you doing until then? Well, I was living with my parents. And then the job interviewer says, well, how long did you last at that job? And Jesus goes, 3 years. 3 years of, you know, preaching and, I don't know, healing and raising the dead and whatnot. And the job interview says, well, 3 years is not very long. What caused you to leave? And Jesus says, well, you're not going to believe this. But they actually killed me. And I think the job interviewer would say, okay, thank you, we'll call you. But really, you know, some might say that his ministry was a failure on the outside, but a success on the inside. That it transformed the world, that Christianity has had a positive impact on the world. And I know that there are Christians that have not had a positive impact on the world, but there are many that have opened us up to the perception of what the Christ consciousness really is, which is oneness and wholeness and inclusivity, right? So that was a possible failure, what the ego might call a failure, that was really a success in hiding. I had my own story about failure and success that happened to me recently. Has anybody here ever had like a really bad prayer fail? Okay. I've had worse ones, but they're all confidential. Like you pray for something and the complete opposite thing happens. And we want to say that that's a bad thing, but maybe it isn't. So my prayer fail is about this trouble that I've had sleeping for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, 10 or 15 years, where I just have insomnia. And it kept getting worse. And I would pray for it to get better. I thought, how hard is insomnia for God? You know, really, God, just give me a good night's rest, please. Okay, some might people say that's the wrong way to pray, but that's how I do it in private. How hard is this, God? Come on. And I kept praying and it wasn't working. I still would have insomnia. And it was actually not getting better. It was getting worse. Now, granted, it was very cheerful insomnia. I wasn't waking up worried or stressed. I was waking up looking for things to do, looking for fun things to do, looking for games to play on my computer and good thoughts to think and things to read and things to watch on television. But ultimately, what happened is that I started doing the prayers of offering that we are teaching in this book, saying, change me, God. Change me into someone that sleeps all night long. And I didn't exactly get that change, but I got the change of waking up in the middle of the night and saying, wow, this is a good time to meditate. This is a good time to listen to mantras on my tablet. This is a really good time to pray. And that became my experience with insomnia. Recently, I spoke with a woman who knows how to cure insomnia, she says, through hypnosis. She says it's really easy to clear through hypnosis. And I was talking to her about somebody else that was struggling who wants to go and see her and get healed through the hypnosis. And she was like, oh yeah, insomnia, that's a piece of cake. And I almost said, well, then you can work on me too. But I didn't, because I've learned to love what I used to call insomnia. Someone else wanted to send me a YouTube the other day, and he said, it's kind of long. And I'm like, no, it's a perfect thing for my new best friend, insomnia. So that's what I'm talking about. You know, that anything that appears to be a failure is perhaps really an opening, an aperture for something greater to come through. And it's usually something that you can't imagine with the human mind. Working on that. Heard that. Yeah. So, that was great. I love that. Was that from the balcony by any chance? It sounded like it. I'm so glad that whoever said that, because this is an invitation for you. It's not about my insomnia. It's not about the failed career of Jesus. It's about the the opening that any of us can experience as we're willing to sort of loosen our labels around failure and to allow the infinite nature of being to show through in mystical consciousness, where mystical consciousness doesn't really believe in failure as a power unto itself. Failure is just an opening for the greater yet to be. So if you can think of something specific in your life that you're calling a failure and just relax on it and offer that failure to the divine and see what the divine can do with it, I am sure that something beautiful will shift in your life and you'll be grateful. You'll be grateful for that thing that you so badly wanted to change. Another thing about mystical consciousness, you know, the mystics don't try and push away what is wanted. But at the same time, to make it really interesting, they don't cling to what is wanted. I was teaching a class the other night, and I was talking about how getting the result that you want is far less important than being in the moment and applying yourself to the moment and also committing yourself to the moment. Now, one of the students in the class lovingly corrected me, and he said, "I'd like to change that first part. Getting the results you want is not as important." He suggested that we say, "Getting the results you want doesn't matter at all." I think that's what he said. I'm sure he'll tell me if I misquoted him after the service. Getting the results you want does not matter at all? Really? What if that's true? I can't say that it's true for every area of my life, but I know that it's true for some, because again, in back of every desire is the desire for oneness and wholeness and living in love, and the desire, to say it in a short way, the desire for God, the desire for spirit, and the desire to be immersed in that absolute reality that can hold all things. But getting the results that you want doesn't matter at all. The results are not important. The journey is far more important. And yet, we still cling, don't we? Okay, that was heartfelt. We still cling. How many of us, seeing as Valentine's Day has just passed, how many of us have ever clung to a relationship? Yeah, we can do a show of pinkies if you want, which is more subtle. Clung to a relationship. Tosha Silver, in one of these books, writes about how, first of all, she was not really a fan of Valentine's Day, because she felt like that all of that love, all of that Shakti energy was just too much to pour into one person, that it should be more universal and spread all around. But then, shortly after she said that, she fell in love, and the next Valentine's Day, this woman that she was madly in love with, who evidently, according to Tosha Silver, was smoking hot, among other things. This woman that she was in love with and in a relationship dumped her 2 days before Valentine's Day. That is what we used to call in college the wicked dump, right? It's a really bad dumpage, all right? So anyway, she dumped her, and Tosha was devastated, thinking, how could this happen to me? Again, clinging to what she wanted for the relationship to be, clinging to this idea that she had to be different to get her back, clinging to the notion that she had done something wrong and that this wasn't supposed to happen to her, especially 2 days before Valentine's Day. She was standing on the street crying her eyes out, rubbing her eyes, and they were swollen, and suddenly this homeless man walked by her and just looked at her, and she didn't say much to him because she was so upset. But then he came back, and he handed her a gardenia. A gardenia that he had gotten from God knows where. Probably somebody's yard, but that's okay. He handed her this gardenia, and she smelled the fragrance of it, and she witnessed the magic of the universe pouring through this kind gesture of this homeless man, and the magic of the fragrance and the magic of the beauty, and she realized everything is okay. Valentine's Day is going to be perfect. And with the scent, that essence of that gardenia and the incident that had happened to her, she took all of that energy and started having the Valentine's Day that she had always dreamed of. Not the one that she wanted with this bimbo that dumped her, but yeah, I'm a Tosha fan. I don't want anybody to be mean to her. She took the energy of unconditional love for all beings and she brought that into the world and she started doing copious amounts, random acts of kindness all over the place. And she came to the conclusion is that that's what Valentine's Day should be. It's not all about one person, the person that we love, but it's about expressing our life and our love and our energy to the whole world. If I remember, we'll do that next year at this church. How about that? Yeah. So mystics don't push away what is not wanted, and they don't cling to the things that they think they want. They don't push away the things that they think they don't want, and they don't cling to the things that they think they want. Remember, all we really want is God. Another thing that mystics do is that they take all of this energy of impermanence and belief and not clinging and not pushing away, and they turn that into action for the benefit of all. There's a mystic sitting in the sanctuary today, and I'm going to talk about him because I have permission to do so. And this mystic's name might be Tony. And he talked about when he used to hike this trail that there was garbage all over it. And he would get frustrated and indignant and feel like these people should be better. They should not be littering this beautiful trail. And finally, one day, he decided to be the change that he wanted to see on the trail, and he brought a trash bag with him and started picking up the garbage, started picking up the trash. Now, that's a beautiful thing, and Tony continued to hike the trail, and he noticed that it was getting cleaner and cleaner. Now, when I read that, I immediately knew the punchline, but I'm going to save it for you. He noticed it was getting cleaner and cleaner, and he said, wow, this is great. People are really shaping up. And then he met this man with these two children, and the man said, oh, I remember meeting you. I remember meeting you. You're the guy who picks up trash. Guess what? And the man pulled out his own trash bag. And he said, my children are so into picking up this trash. They get so excited when they find a little tiny scrap of paper or a little tiny piece of glass and they pick it up. Thank you so much for bringing us this wisdom. And that's how it works. That's how this stuff that we teach here in this center works. We do small, great things to bless other beings. And in the process, we bless ourselves, and it ripples out to bless people that we haven't even met yet. And then that story came to me, and now it's rippling out to all of you. And I'm positive that it will bless you in your lives and allow you to bless other people with the same wisdom. You never know how far this type of energy can go. This mystical energy that doesn't push away, that doesn't cling, and that strives to take these principles into being, into life, living like the truth is true. The next song that the choir is going to sing is called Save the Country. It's a song, I guess it was a hit song from the 70s? Right? Late 60s, okay. The ATM has spoken. David Carrigan is a factoid ATM. You just push a button and it'll spit out dates and whatnot. The late 60s. And it occurred to me as I was preparing this talk and trying to tie it in with the song that's being sung afterwards, is that I think a lot of people are trying to save the country or save the world. And we may not be doing it in the most evolved manner all of the time. Honestly, I keep going back to that Martin Luther King idea that you can't drive out hatred with hatred, and you can't drive out darkness with darkness. Maybe the answer, maybe the new avatar, the new Christ, is really all of us. All of us doing small acts of goodness, all of us remembering who we are, all of us refraining from pushing away what is not wanted, but rather befriending it and embracing it and using it how it wants us to be used, and refraining from clinging to that which we're clinging to, whether it's a concept or an idea or a person or a way of doing things. Our way of saving the world is the right way. Our way of saving the country is the right way. I believe that it is the work of inner transformation and the focus on the small that is what gets the job done. And in so doing, everything that we do, whether it's shopping at the grocery store or picking up trash on a trail or singing a song in a choir or serving here at the center, everything becomes holy. Everything becomes a sacrament. One more thing. The theme that runs through all of this is the idea of offering ourselves to the divine, or offering our clinging to the divine, or offering our resistance to the divine, or offering our hands and our feet and our heart and our eyes to the divine. Spirit, help me to see things differently. The truth is that when we continue to offer ourselves to the divine, something happens. Again, this is a warning. If you continue to offer yourself to the divine, the separate self might be highly disappointed because you will fall in love with yourself, with others, with all of existence. Let's fall in love now and offer ourselves. Thank you.